Welcome to Comics.
Episode 262. We talk about
witches.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
So, I don't know, nothing else. Has anything happened in the world of comics since we
Let me see. Not really. I mean, I haven't read much in the last week or so, other than witches. Oh, but they announced a release date for Pacific Rim 2.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's I forget the exact date, but it's February of 2018. John Boyega is going to be in it.
Yeah.
And he tweeted something, or I forget if it was a tweet or an Instagram post, where it was something about dad. So I think he's going to be Stacker Pentecost's son.
Oh, that'd be or fucking something. Sick.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm just, who knows? I could be completely wrong.
You know what I love the most about where we are in movies is that there's guys like John Boyega who grew up as a kid as a Star Wars fan. So, yeah. He's going into the Star Wars franchise, you know, he's going into it the same way you and I would go into it if we happened to be in the movies. Except he's, starring role.
Have you ever seen the movie one of his first major roles in the movie? It's called Attack the Block.
Uh-uh.
It's pretty good sci-fi movie. He's like a thuggish, like, British teenager. But he's like pretty young, so he's not. It's kind of a comedy, but it's also like an alien invasion movie. It's hard to describe, but it's a great movie. I highly recommend it if you get a chance to watch it.
I do marketing materials for university listeners, and we were making a brochure the other day. We were going through stock photos, and I came across one. I was like, is that motherfucking Finn in a stock photo? Like, it was, four or five students in a row, and, like, the third or four, like, the second from the last was this black guy, and I was like, is that Finn, or am I just hella racist? And so I looked at the picture, and I looked on Reddit, and apparently, before he was an actor, Finn was a model for, John Boyega was a model for stock photography.
Hey, man, you gotta get started somewhere.
Dude, so this is the problem. It was the perfect picture to use, but I couldn't use it, because then I'd be like, it's fucking... Anybody who sees it is like... It immediately distracts from the effectiveness of the brochure, because nobody's gonna look at the material. They're just gonna be like, is that motherfucking Finn?
Yeah.
Is that FN2187? What the hell?
People will just yell traitor at it and tear it up.
Traitor! I would... Oh! If somebody did that in front of me, I would give them a high five.
They would have earned it.
Oh yeah.
So another thing that was announced recently is in August there's going to be another Gundam Build Fighters release.
Ooh, yeah, you posted something on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I think it's just a special.
I'll take it.
And yeah, it comes out in August. So the little promotional material too. It looks like there's some additional. Gunpla kits. One of them looks like a bear guy with a panda theme.
Okay.
And then there's another Gyan. I don't know if it's the same as the Gyagya from that we see in Build Fighters.
Try. That one is so sick.
But it looks similar. It's got the shield and stuff. So you know that's coming out in August. So people can look forward to that.
I'm watching the first one, Gundam Build Fighters, with Alex during my lunch break. Mm. So every day we get together and have lunch and watch an episode of an anime. He picks a series and then I'll pick a series. As long as it's season long, we'll do trade off. And, nice. So we're going through Build Fighters. And it is, that show is really good, but it's also like the most shonen thing ever. It's just full of all of the shonen tropes just yeah, layered on top of each other.
But it's put together well.
But it's well done and it's fun to watch. The only thing is I've noticed Alex and I have a knack for finding mental disorders. So like when we were watching One Piece, he was like, I'm pretty sure Luffy is a sociopath. And I looked up the definition and I was like, yeah, that's actually a textbook. Like, he's a textbook sociopath, Luffy. He cares nothing about his crewmates, so long as it, like, just, if you look down the thing, it's textbook. So we were watching Gundam Build Fighters, and I'm pretty sure Mr. Rawl is actually a victim of PTSD. In the way that every time, like, he talks to people who are, like, in the Gundam community, they all call him Lieutenant, which is something you do when somebody has PTSD. You want to keep them, if they're in that mode, you keep them in that mode. Like, if they're reliving a bit of trauma, you don't want to try and jostle them out because it'll make them more violent. So if they were Lieutenant, you would call them Lieutenant. A couple times when he comes late to, like, the Gundam things, to the fights, people ask him, where have you been? And he'll say, I've been on patrol. And that's what people with PTSD do. They patrol the block, you know? And just, like, the more and more I watch, the more and more just confirms that, like, I don't know, maybe he, at some point in his life, he had a really traumatic Gundam-related experience, and it's given him post-traumatic stress disorder. Alex's cockamamie theory is that Rawl was actually born in the future, in the world of Gunpla, in the world of Gundam, and sent back in time, and sees that... that the inspiration for the Gundams he's been fighting in his goof was actually the stupid game that kids played when they were like back in time. And so now he's traumatized by the reality of his being an actual Gundam pilot. And now he has to come to grips with that as he sees kids play with them.
Well, does Alex know that there's a character from Universal Century, like the original Mobile Suit TV show named Rombo Rawl?
Yes. So I've looked up Rombo Rawl and showed it to him and everything. So that's how he has that theory, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's how he has that theory.
Yeah.
But yeah, I honestly, if you rewatch that series thinking that Rawl is a PTSD victim, if you watch it again thinking he has PTSD, it makes it a really interesting viewing of the character.
All right,
because it's just confirmed left and right, and there's not a whole lot that I mean, obviously they're not going to do that overtly, but you know,
right. So DC's Rebirth comics are like killing it. They're totally outselling Marvel right now.
But I also read that New 52 did about as well also when it relaunched.
Yeah, New 52 did really well, but I think
people like buying number ones.
I feel like the Rebirth books are better so far.
Yeah, I feel like the sales numbers... I mean, the people like to buy number ones, and putting a number one on the shelf goes a long way in terms of getting somebody who is on the edge about picking a book up to go ahead and pick it up. So, like, if you've been on the edge about getting into Blue Beetle as a character, you know, seeing a number one on the shelf, that's... Yeah, sure, put it on my pull list, whatever, fuck it. Number one, story starts here, cool, put it in and I'll try it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly works on me.
Yeah, and you and I are committed comic book readers, but people are just kind of going into the shop who've heard of the character or seen it before or whatever. That can be all it takes to get them to buy one. So number ones sell. So, I mean, if you want to look at sales number, that's great, but I'm a little bit cautious of that. But what I love is that within like a month of New 52 coming out, everybody was shitting on it already, and turns out in the long run they were right. And Rebirth, everybody seems to be really, really happy with it. Like the critical feedback for it's really good, and the fan feedback for it is almost all completely positive. I have no idea what's going on, but apparently Tom King is killing it with Batman.
I've only read the first couple. I read the standalone, and then I read number one. And it was good. I mean, Calendar Man to me was always kind of a joke of a villain, but he's pretty terrifying in this. And like the way his powers like manifest is very interesting. So I think I like the Batman so far. There's only been the one. I think there's only been the one issue and the one shot anyway. But
okay, you know, I'd never heard of Tom King before we did the Best of Marvel series just like last month. So did you read? I hadn't read anything about Tom King until the Best of DC and Best of Marvel stuff that we did last month. And his Omega Man was okay. It was a little hits and a little bit of misses. But his Vision was awesome. Have you read the Vision one by Tom King?
I haven't read it. I've heard amazing things about it, but I haven't read it yet.
It's on MDCU. You should read that. I know you have your pull list that you haven't gotten to, that you've been meaning to, but man,
I'm caught up.
It's so good.
I'm caught up on all the DC stuff I have in my backlog except for Dr. Fate. I had been buying the Dr. Fate comic, mm-hmm. so I have like 13 issues of Dr. Fate to read. Uh-huh. But it's done now because of the rebirth. So
okay, yeah. The only thing I have that I get singles of in my pull box anymore. Everything else is trade paperback. The only thing I'm getting singles of is Totally Awesome Hulk.
Oh yeah, I have that to read too.
Because the name of it's awesome. I had to add it to my pull list, but I'll probably change that over to trade paperback pretty soon too. Yeah,
I have all the Star Wars as trades because
that box would get huge. You would have multiple Star Wars boxes real quick.
Well, and the thing too is like I have the full run. I have all the trades for Star Wars Legacy and Knights of the Old Republic from Dark Horse.
Nice.
So I wanted to keep that trade paperback
train, keep the train rolling. Yeah.
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 Well, anyways, let's talk about this week.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
This week we read Witches, Volume 1, written by Scott Snyder with art from Jock. It's J-O-C-K, all in caps. So I don't know if it's Jock or Jock! I don't know, one of those two. But yeah, Witches. This is a horror one. We did not read Democracy because it's not available in digital anywhere. I tried a local comic book shop and they didn't have it in stock. And then David looked at Barnes & Noble, and there's not a single Barnes & Noble in our metro area, and we live in the 10th largest metro area in the United States.
Well, there's like four Barnes & Nobles, and none of them had it.
Yeah, which...
Anyways, the store... What it comes down to is we couldn't find...
Oh, it's Bloomsbury. A copy of
it. Yeah.
Okay.
we couldn't find a copy of it, so...
And there wasn't time to order it off of Amazon either.
Right. So I made a... you know, an executive decision to read Witches. The reason I picked this is because I like Scott Snyder, and I don't even remember the last time we did a horror comic.
I think we did a horror two-party. We did American Horror Story and something else. I don't even remember what the other one was.
Oh, American Vampire.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think we did American Vampire as part of our little Scott Snyder arc.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, we've done like a smattering of horror before, and this definitely fits on the best of 2015 list. Like, it's on a lot of lists of best of 2015.
Yeah, yeah.
It's on a lot of lists for like some of the best horror in the last decade. So it's not. We didn't just pick something randomly. This does belong in our rest of 2015. Rest of the best of 2015.
Yeah. So, Andy, you were, when I mentioned reading a horror comic, you were not. You weren't super excited about it because you said that horror is not really your cup of tea, right?
Yeah, it's not my genre. It's not my genre in movies. It's not my genre in books. And it's like even less my genre in comics.
Mm-hmm. So I'm similar to you. I don't really like watching horror movies or TV shows, but I do like reading horror. So I think I'm more inclined to read this type of thing than you are, it sounds like. So, I'm curious, now that we've read the first six issues, what you thought of this overall.
Well, you know, here's the thing that gets me with horror stuff, right? Like, when it's a horror movie, there's a certain amount of the movie that's spent just trying to creep you out, or just trying to make you jump. And that's not what I want in a movie, because I don't really jump and I don't really get creeped out because I know it's fake. And I know that like part of it is, you know, suspending your own disbelief so that the fake stuff feels more real. But I can't bring myself to do that because I'm a very critical viewer and a very critical reader. And when I'm sitting there watching a movie, I'm thinking about how character matters and plot and interaction. And you can't bring that stuff to a horror movie, and I can't stop myself from bringing it. So it very rarely makes horror movie viewing a good experience. And I feel like in comic books, so much space is always given to making that horror tone come across from the art or the feel or the vibe. Or the aura of the comic has to be horror for some reason. I think that's what I didn't like about Arkham Asylum when we read that. Oh, who wrote that one? I don't remember who wrote it, but it was art by Dave McKean. And Dave McKean's a good artist, but there's so many times when a huge percentage of the page is taken up by, I don't know, clippings from some voodoo book or some bullshit. And then there's like, he did mixed media, so there was like some lace that he had dipped in like red paint that I think was supposed to be blood. And that caught onto the page. And I'm like, this is just taking up space. And
yeah,
when I was reading this comic, I had a really similar gut reaction. When I would turn the page, I was like, man, this art is kind of neat, but what is this stupid wash over everything? This like psychedelic splatter over every fucking page. I was like, this does nothing for me. This does nothing at all but make it harder to read.
Okay.
But getting beyond that, what I like about this is it takes the time to establish a decent set of characters, and it takes the time to set up a mythology that lets it build for longer. So the first three issues of this, I was super bored and kind of annoyed. But the last two issues, I bought in the last two. I think I really bought in when the mother revealed that she was the one who pledged Thaler. That's when I was like, oh, this just got okay. Because that's an interesting moral dilemma coming from the mother. It sets up a whole mythology for the family and how Sailor's going to have to interact with this world that we're supposed to sense is kind of everywhere, that there's a forest in this country. There's witches, which there's a lot of forests in the United States. So it sets up a much larger story with its own mythology, and I was able to get into that. But the horror part of this, I still like the first, what was it, the second issue when the deer comes in and just like vomits its head off? I was like,
yeah, that was kind of weird.
I was like, this is dumb. And then like two issues later, Scott Snyder writes that off himself. It's like, well, you know, sometimes deer just get sick and I guess it was a sign. I don't know. It's like, I get the feeling that early on you felt like you had to do something creepy and then you just kind of left it there later. And same thing with the kid in the hospital with the bag of it filled up green.
That didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, that didn't go anywhere either.
And I forgot about that.
I think there's these things that are supposed to feel creepy or build this vibe of the town feeling creepy. But for me, it's just like, okay, did that mean anything? And so I think about that as I go through the issues and I'm like, okay, so how does the deer matter? And then I get to the end of the sixth issue, I'm like, oh, I guess the deer didn't matter.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, I too don't like movies that are like jump scares, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is not an enjoyable experience to me. I am the type of person that will jump, and I think that really pulls me out of the viewing experience. When I say I like, when I say I like horror, I really like Lovecraft.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the thing that's different about H.P. Lovecraft's horror, brand of horror, as opposed to, I guess Saw's not really a horror movie. Yeah. But, you know, something that's like a jump scare type of movie is that
Lovecraft's like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Lovecraft is probably the best example of this where whatever's terrifying, it's so big, it's like incomprehensible, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond the understanding of the characters in the story. And you get some answers, but a lot of times the answers just lead to more questions. And I think that this comic kind of has elements of both, right? We see this, like you said, you mentioned the mythology. But there is there's some gore factor to it, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, not like, I don't feel like it was gore for gore's sake.
Yeah.
Maybe the deer was a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think overall that wasn't the case.
And I mean, the deer is the example that sticks in my mind. I think mostly because they mention it, like, the characters in the comic mention it again later. Like, oh, you know, sometimes wild animals are just sick and they get lost and wander into the house. And, like, if you... why put that in there if you're just going to ignore it later? Because there's things that they do drop earlier that do matter later, you know? Like how he has the Ferris wheel tattooed on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, at the beginning, I'm like, what the fuck is this Ferris wheel doing on this guy's shoulder? But at the end, you see, like, that is his entire, that stupid fucking Ferris wheel is, like, it's his entire reason for being here. It's his entire reason for living is that moment now and making up for that mm-hmm. moment. Like, that's all he's doing his entire life every single day is making up for that moment. So it's something like, it's a little thing that gets dropped at the beginning a couple times in a couple different ways, and then you get there later. Scott Snyder does a good job of dropping that stuff early on. And, like, Annie comes back, you know? And, like,
yeah.
there's things that are done really well, those little hints that build up. And that does a good job of building up suspense. So I think the deer just sticks out in my mind more than anything else because it was so graphically done, and then the characters themselves mention it, and then it didn't matter at all. But, yeah, I feel like the best horror is when it builds that mythology, which is like H.P. Lovecraft, you're right, is a fantastic example. Because he, aside from being a good suspense writer and good at tone, he does a good job at building a mythology for each of his worlds. And so, like, there's the creepiness of the town and everybody going crazy slowly as they feel the insane pressure of this unspeakable thing.
Right.
You know? And that slow build, that slow burn creepiness of everybody going slightly more insane, that is what makes for a great tone. Because you're like, what the fuck is doing this? And you find it like, what the fuck is that?
Mm.
And I feel like, I'm going to bring it up for the second week in a row, Attack on Titan kind of does this for a little while before it goes all shonen.
Yeah, I mean, the characters, they're under this constant threat. And they can see that. You know, they're, whatever is, you know, the Titans are in plain sight,
mm-hmm.
but they have no idea what they're about. It's like it's right in front of their faces, but the answer is just out of reach, you know? And that's part of the terror of it, is they have no idea what's happening to them.
Yeah.
And you get that's what we see here, right? Until... even
it's revealed that everybody in town actually knows what's going on, but they're all pretending that they don't.
Well, I mean, but the characters that are giving us the point of view of the story, they don't know. Even when the dad gets answers from the lady with no legs, he still mm-hmm. doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, so he still doesn't know. But I mean, like earlier on when Sailor says she sees things.
Yeah,
and the dad's like, maybe I believe you, but I don't know, because he wasn't there. And then they go to other people, and you realize, oh, everybody that she's gone, everybody that Sailor and the father have gone to talk to about this, they're all in with the witches. So they're all just going to say, oh, you're crazy, you must have seen something. Just go back to bed, and then they'll come get you.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's that kind of it's the same kind of feeling of the pressure of the insanity of the town building up, but it's the other way. It's just like they all are perfectly sane and they know what they're doing, but they're all against you, and you don't realize until the end that you were completely fucked from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean the fate of Sailor was inevitable until the dad sacrificed himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm surprised that she. I think a lot of it was luck, too, that she got away at all.
Oh, yeah. And that awesome spray gun full of pledge.
Yeah.
I know how to slow them down. Give them lots and lots of food.
So, yeah, you know, this comic does a great job of... I feel like the story was, in the six issues, was pretty tight and... satisfying. You know, sometimes you don't... I don't think we got that with Descender, necessarily.
No. And this we were talking about making comparison to movies before. This is where a movie would end, too. And it would feel like a good place to end the movie.
Like, and with Descender, I think it... knowing how comics and trade paperbacks work from the publishing side, it was a logical place to stop. But yeah. From a complete story, we didn't get that with Descender in the same way that we did with Witches.
Yeah.
But Witches is also successful in the same way that Descender was, in that we, at least for me, I'm interested in coming back and reading more, because I want to know what's going on in this. You know, Sailor's going to step out into a bigger, she has awareness now of mm-hmm. this, of something else happening in the world, and now she's going out and she'll be aware of it wherever she goes, and that, you know, that's, I don't know if she's going to become a witch hunter or something, but the pressure of knowing is probably going to have an impact on her, and not knowing who else knows, right?
Yeah, not knowing, I mean,
she's supposed to go find these people, the Irons, right?
Yeah, but what the fuck are they?
Yeah, who are they, and how long is it, how many other people who are on the side of the witches is she going to come across mm-hmm. before she meets up with them? You know,
I mean, she pretty much knows nothing more than their name. Yeah. And to go inland. Okay.
Or go into open spaces, right?
Yeah, stay away from trees.
So yeah, it was interesting. Yeah. So would you say that you did like the comic overall?
I don't know. There's such a split. The first three issues, I was bored, and the last three issues, I was pretty interested. I say the biggest detractor for me was the art. And I mean,
okay.
I understand when he's going down into the burrow that the art is supposed to be fluid and a little bit difficult to see, you know, because mm-hmm. it's supposed to be this kind of, it's like a twisted version of the Fae, right? This is something that's been in literature, especially in Anglo literature for a long time, is the idea of the green world, right? There's the world where we all live, and then you go on a journey into nature to fight a dragon or whatever. Or you just go on a journey and you go into the woods, and the woods kind of start to feel a little bit different, and suddenly you run into a fairy and a dragon, and you're in this other green world, the Fae, this other world where magical things can happen, that exists in the forest. But it always feels and looks kind of loosey-goosey to these characters. The flip side, then, is this, where he goes down into the burrow, and he slipped out of reality, or at least how he's able to perceive reality. He slips out of that into their world, and it's mm-hmm. a twisted version of that. And so I get that it's all supposed to also kind of feel loosey-goosey, but half the time I have no idea what the fuck I was looking at. Because the art does a good job of doing that on its own. And then there's this, like, splatter, psychedelic wash. I'm hung up on it. It was on every fucking page, and it was so annoying when it didn't need to be there. And
yeah,
you know, there were scenes where straight up he was just like chilling in the dining room, like drinking a cup of coffee, and there was like ooh put over it. I'm like, we just having a cup of coffee. Who cares?
You know, when I opened the book to the well. I read it on Comixology, yeah. So I didn't actually open it. But when I went to the first page, I didn't have a positive reaction to the art. Because generally, I mean, I remember when we talked about Arkham Asylum literally years ago, I was very down on the art in that comic. And at first, that was my gut reaction too, but as I read the comic more, I got used to the art and being able to follow it, I guess. And so my opinion of it changed. But I do see what you're saying when it comes to the wash. It was kind of random throughout the... well, not throughout the comic, but it was definitely on the pages where we see them in the forest or in the witch's world, right?
Yeah, and... You could also make, I like what you're saying about how you get used to it, and I think that idea kind of fits here, in that the more you're in the witch's world, the more you see the world through the lens of this wash, the more used to it you get, and the more that you can see clearly through it, which is a nice artistic analogy for what the characters themselves in the comic are going through, in that they're suddenly having to get used to seeing the world in this completely different way, through this completely different lens of how things work. And as they go through the process of rescuing Sailor from the burrow, Sailor and the father are, they gain clarity on their situation as well. So they're kind of seeing through the haze themselves. I like the idea of that parallel. I just, the art style is good enough to do that on its own. I just feel like this wash was unnecessary. Okay. I think that's what gets me the most, is the art was otherwise good, and I liked it. And, like, the art in the burrow did feel the way I think it should have felt underneath the wash, and it just felt unnecessary.
Okay, I mean, that's fair. I mean, I don't really have, like, I didn't love it, but I became...
Didn't have the reaction I did.
Yeah, I don't think I react quite the same way.
So, what about you? Okay. So let's go to one of the big, like, cruxes for me in this comic was when the mother stood up out of the wheelchair and was like, "It's me all along, I pledged her!" to get rid of the pledge on her family. And, yeah.
You know,
that was a cool moment for me, and for a second I was like, dude, maybe you should.
See, my thought was, I didn't think that the dad should do it, but I thought he might actually side with the daughter, or with the mom, and somehow, I thought that was just gonna be how I thought it was gonna end on a negative note, you know, where the protagonist,
dies in the burrow with nobody remembering her, with her parents forgetting she even exists. Because it's a tempting offer, right? This is what he's been trying to do ever since that day on the roller coaster. Like, he's made his life about redeeming himself. I think that's where the crux is. He's made his life about that moment, right? That moment on the roller coaster where he failed his daughter. And I think his wife is seeing it as, we can make it so that never existed. That moment that you're running from, that moment that we moved to get away from, that moment that's affected you so deeply, it can never have happened before. We can change our memories so that it never happened at all. And that's her solution, and coming from this world. But he doesn't see it that way. He doesn't want to run away from it. He wants to redeem himself for it. He sees it not as something he wants to avoid, but as something he needs to make up for. And that I think, is ultimately what makes him a good character, and why he has to make the decision that he makes, and why he's fucked. Because redeeming yourself in a horror comic never turns out well.
But he went out and he did the right thing, ultimately, and went out in maybe not a blaze of glory because he got eaten by monsters, but, you know.
Well, he saved his daughter. Sacrificed himself to save his daughter. That's a pretty good blaze of glory, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a tempting offer. And you're right, narratively, it would have made for an interesting, different way to go, too.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't. I didn't want him to make the what I think is as the wrong decision, where he lets them have the daughter. But I wasn't sure. I thought it could go either way, and I feel like I would not have been satisfied with the ending. Maybe if Sailor had died. Well, maybe that's not the right thing to say, because it depends on the way it would have been handled, right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been sure where the comic was going to go from here.
Yeah.
With issue number 7 and beyond.
Then right? There's nothing to carry you from issue 6 to issue 7.
Right. Well, I mean, who knows? A good writer could make that work somehow.
Yeah, a new family moves into the town. Or like, every 7 issues you have a new family move in. And you just get a completely new perspective on the town. I mean, that's a possibility. That's something I think a horror genre could do.
The story could be about the town and not about the families necessarily.
Or it could be about Petal. Now.
Yeah.
Officer Petal. Well,
he got eaten too, right? No, he didn't.
No, I'm pretty sure he lived. New villain.
Yeah.
He's gonna track her down.
I have to go back and see. I don't remember. Let me see here. But then, yeah, you're right. She had what did she have in her pocket? That bit of yellow something that she like slashed him with.
Is it pledge or stink?
No, she had like a little like piece of metal or something.
Oh, God, I don't remember.
I'll have to go back and look. Anyways, what she cut Petal with.
Yeah.
She, like, slashed him across the neck with something. But we didn't see him die.
Yeah. If he died, he died off page, which means he's not really dead.
Right.
That's how comics work.
Yeah.
Especially a horror comic.
I mean, even if he did die, he could have just been in a Kryptonian healing coma, right? Is that what that thing's called?
Yes.
Or frozen in a block of ice like Captain America?
Yeah. Or this could actually be a fake Petal, and the real Petal is in an egg underneath the ocean. Like Jean Grey.
That was so bad. Yeah, anyways.
So then my question is, we're calling this horror genre and horror comics. Did this feel like it succeeded as a horror comic? Like, did this succeed at all in creeping you out, or at the very least, not make you jump or anything, but like if you look outside and see a tree, you kind of see maybe a shadow of a witch coming out of a knotten tree?
I don't know. I think I certainly felt tension and suspense while I was reading it, but I'm not like scared of to go in the forest or anything. And it certainly didn't make me jump. If reading a comic made me jump somehow, I would say it succeeded. I don't know how that would work. I think it's hard to define horror, right? I mean, I think as far as I would label this horror, and I think it succeeded in being a tense and suspenseful read, and it did have some disturbing aspects to it. It showed a dark side of human nature where this town is driven by greed, and they're so greedy that they're willing to sacrifice other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think it succeeds in the very broad sense of horror, right? It's not like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street or anything, but maybe closer to the way that like Lovecraft is, where there's a sense of impending dread or inevitable dread.
Hmm.
And you know, the even though our hero or the protagonist gets away, a lot of people die, right? I mean, witches kill like a bunch of people in the town.
Yeah. And the mother and the father both die.
Yeah. So I think it's you know, the ending is positive for our protagonist, but it's certainly not a happy ending, right?
No, her parents are dead. She has no friends.
Even the uncle died, I guess. I mean, we assume he never got Reggie, out of that dream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it succeeds. What about you?
I don't know. In my mind, a good horror thing is something that sticks with you and creeps you out, and something that you see an image of it when you close your eyes. In a way that you can't stop yourself from thinking it. And my classic example of a good horror that did that to me, probably because I watched it when I was way too young, is Event Horizon, the movie.
I love that movie.
That's a good fucking movie, and it is legit scary as hell.
Yeah, it is.
I watched it again as an adult, and I was like, I don't think it's just because I was a kid. I think it's because it's actually a pretty good, damn good horror movie.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, I watched it... it was on Netflix recently. Maybe about a year ago I watched it on Netflix. And yeah, legit, it's like, this is a terrifying movie.
Yeah, and I could close my eyes probably right now and see that stupid fucking gravity ball.
yeah.
Right? Like, the whole premise of it is fucking stupid, right? Like, they try to get interdimensional space travel and they end up opening a portal to hell or some shit. Like, the premise is dumb as fuck, but there's a lot of stuff in it that sticks in your eyeballs. And... nothing in this comic sticks in my eyeball.
Okay.
Probably, I'm going to go back to it, probably because it has a stupid wash over everything. You know, and if there is an image that would have stuck in my eyeball, instead there's a wash over it, and I see that instead. And I don't know. That's probably just me harping on a dead horse. But regardless of that, there's nothing in this comic that sticks in my eyeball. And I feel like what I like most about this comic isn't anything horror related. What I like most about this comic is the mythology that it's building internally and the way that it's kind of bending towards a fantasy comic, I want to say. There's in horror, there's this kind of like fantasy element that strings through all of the things that fit the genre, especially in American horror. It's it either swerves and leans towards the voodoo kind of stuff from the South, or it goes to like the Puritan witches, and American horror tends to go in one of those two avenues, and I feel like that stuff is the more interesting part, but that's not horror in my mind. That feels just like world building, mythology, fantasy. It doesn't scare me, and art-wise, none of it stuck in my eye. So the stuff that I like about this, I feel, is completely removed from the fact that it's horror. I want to know about the Irons. You know? I want to know what the other hunters look like. I want to know if Sailor goes on to become the badass mythological killer that she's supposed to be, you know? Like, is Sailor Buffy, basically?
Yeah.
But hunting witches instead of vampires. In which case, that's a cool comic, and I could dig reading that. But that, to me, then isn't a horror comic. That's just somebody being a witch hunter. And that's a different comic. That's more like tarot in my mind.
I think there... Yeah. I hope this comic doesn't go down that road. I think that there... Like you said... There's definitely a blending of genres, right? You could... Like, look at a TV show like Supernatural, right? I haven't watched a ton of Supernatural, but that has, you know, demons and ghosts and stuff in it, right? And so one could say that there are horror elements to it, but it's not really a horror comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a horror TV show. It's not trying to scare you. It's just, I mean, it's in the title, right? It's Supernatural.
Yeah.
And Supernatural doesn't, like Ghostbusters, right? Ghostbusters is about ghosts, but I don't think it's scary at all. I wouldn't classify it as a horror movie. But it certainly has horror elements to it.
Dude, that Stay Puft Marshmallow Man has better stick in my eyeballs than than these witches.
But not because it's scary, though.
I don't know, man. I was a kid when I watched that. That thing was legit kind of scary. And the stupid dogs that Gozer had, my God.
Those were scary, but it's a horror element,
it's
right?
Yeah, it's a horror element that gets poked fun at.
You're with Ghostbusters, you see the dogs, right? And you say, okay, those are definitely meant to be frightening. But that's not the goal of the movie overall.
Yeah.
And I think maybe you could say the same about this comic. It's supposed to have horror elements, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. And I think...
Go ahead, sorry.
No, you go.
I was going to say maybe Event Horizon is similar, right? It's a it looks like a sci-fi movie on the surface, but as you watch more about it. Yeah. Or Alien, right? The original Alien movie is a scary movie, but it has a very thick science fiction layer on top of the horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I think blending genres successfully, is a very important way is a very important piece of creating successful stories, right? Because when you can bring two things together, maybe not necessarily things that are surprising to see them combined, but to combine them successfully is important in creating a good story. And I'd say that this, you know, Witches definitely has a very strong horror element to it. But it's more than just a horror comic, right?
Yeah.
At least that's my take.
And I think you have completely articulated, you completely articulated what I think about this comic, and also kind of the thing that I think why I don't like this comic.
Okay.
Because in the first couple issues, I think they were trying to be horror. And then they realized that that wasn't the footing that they were going to have. So the first three or four issues, they were trying to go for that pure horror. And then they realized that their footing was actually a little bit more in supernatural. And then issues 5 and 6 go further into the blending side when it got really good. And so I mean, that's natural, right? I mean, you get an artist, you get an author, and you slap them together and you say, go make a comic. And very rarely is the comic great out of the gate in issue one. It takes time for a duo, or trio or quartet, how many people are working on the comic, you know, arts, inks, colors, whatever. It takes time for them to find their footing and to find their voice together, you know? It's not like any other kind of storytelling, where one person has their voice and everybody listens to it. No, this is, you know, the author has a voice here, the artist has a voice here, the colorist has a voice here, and they all have to speak together in harmony to make this comic work and make it feel right. And I think it doesn't start to feel right until issue 5 or 6.
I think you can see that kind of thing happens with TV shows sometimes.
Oh,
where
yeah. The pilot is almost always the worst episode of any show.
Yeah, and you like see, okay, you can watch the pilot and say, okay, that wasn't great, but you can see the potential.
Yeah.
And it takes a little while as, like, the actors start to work together, or a certain director comes on and does an episode, and they just totally knock it out of the park, and the rest of the creative team goes, okay, that's the direction we're going to go. And so, you know, maybe you're right about that, but I think it can be more detrimental to something like comics, where the release cycle is slower and the amount of media released every month is smaller. So
if I were reading this on singles, I would have taken it out of my pull box after the third issue.
Yeah, I think it can be dangerous for it can be dangerous for comics if they can't grab an audience pretty quickly. I think somebody like Scott Snyder has more leeway in finding the right footing or something,
yeah,
whatever we want to call it,
yeah,
because he has
an
good name recognition,
portfolio of good work.
Yeah, but sometimes it might not be. Another creator without the same reputation might have a harder time getting something like this off the ground. But I think I definitely like this comic more than you did.
Yeah. So you want to get down and rate it?
Yeah, I think we've talked about it for a while now. So yeah,
okay,
we could rate it.
Okay, I'll go first. I am going to give this a 3.5.
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that's and the more we've talked about this comic, the more I'm finding that I did like about it. I just think, like I just said, it took a long time to find its footing, and if I had been picking this up single issues, issue 3, I would have been like, take it out, and somebody gives me maybe the fourth one, but the fourth issue, I still would have been, take it out. If I'd done singles, or if I'd have been reading this for fun, or picking this up because I have Comixology Unlimited, and it was on there, and I was giving it a try, I would have stopped reading. But I had to keep reading for the show, and I'm kind of glad I did, because the last couple issues are pretty good. When they go down into the burrow, and you get to the payoff of what feels like a long, slow, useless burn. With the kid in the hospital, the deer, just the random stuff that kind of gets thrown around to, like I said at the very top of the show, things that are there to make it feel creepy, because it's horror. But it didn't need those things. And I think in the later half of the latter half or latter third of the trade, it kind of sloughs those things off, because it has a lot of story to get through. It doesn't have time to be creepy for creepy's sake. It's got to get moving. So once it gets moving, it's good read. So yeah, 3.5. And the art is good. I did like the art in this. I just didn't like that stupid psychedelic bullcrap over everything. Take that off, I would have liked the art. I don't know who Jock is. I don't know if Jock is a person or if Jock is an art studio. I don't know Jock. But Jock, you're a good artist or good artists. Just trust your work and don't. I don't know whose decision it was, but Jock did good pencil.
Jock is a person.
Okay.
I don't know, actually. I was going to say he has feelings.
And Jock did nice. Good pencil.
Yeah.
I don't know whose call it was, but the art is good underneath that wash.
Jock gives good pencil.
That's what it's fucking late, man. So yeah, three and a half. What do you got?
Okay. I'm gonna give it a 4. I thought it was good. I agree that there was a bit of a slow burn there, but I don't think it was I don't think it impacted me in the same way that impacted you. I thought this was good. If you like Scott Snyder, I would recommend it. And if you like something a little bit different, I would check it out too. I don't know what you would call it. Hard horror? I don't know.
It sounds like a... Nothing, never mind.
Yeah. But I think overall it's a good comic. And it's a nice departure from the mainstream stuff. So, yeah, 4.
Okay. Man, we were only half a point off. The way we were talking, I felt like I was more than half a point behind you.
But well, I
should have given it a 3.
I thought about giving it a 4.5, but I thought it was not quite 4.5. Maybe like 4.25. How about I'll give it 4.25.
I think the more we talk, the more we gravitated towards each other. I brought you down a bit, and you brought me up a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you know what?
I mean, but 3.5 and 4 are good scores, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's both way above average.
Yeah, and I firmly believe that a 2.5 score should be average. Like, you know, so many review sites you go to, oh, it got less than 7.5 out of 10 stars, it must be crap. No, 7.5 still means average should be 5. If we have a 5-star system, an average everyday okay comic should be 2.5. So yeah. If you're over 2.5, you're better than the average comic. You're better than half of the stuff in the store. At least that's the way it ought to be.
And I think this is definitely up there towards in the upper rungs of the comic book ladder.
All right. Anyways. And actually, oh, you know, I just realized we just got through the second episode in a row without Jen here and haven't explained that she's gone. Jen's on a couple week hiatus. She wasn't here last week. She wasn't here this week, and she won't be here next week. But that's fine. She's got stuff to do. She'll be back when she's done, and hopefully in a couple weeks she'll even be trying to join us from Deutschland. That's Germany, the fatherland. Yeah. But yeah, she's working on that stuff. So while she's doing that, we're gonna trudge on without her. And next week we're gonna trudge into Black River. You like that? Into the river. So yeah, we're gonna read Black River, written by Josh Simmons. Written and drawn, or just written? Written. I don't know. We'll go with this. And turns out, it's a horror comic, too.
Is it?
Oh, well, it's one of those cross-genre ones. So it's labeled horror in a lot of places, but I think it's more firmly post-apocalyptic. So the synopsis is that a group of women, one man, and two dogs are important, are making their way through a post-apocalyptic world in search of a city that supposedly still has electricity and some sort of civilization. So this feels a little bit like, world has ended, we're going to try and get somewhere where the world hasn't ended, and shit's going to happen along the way. And I think that shit happening along the way is supposed to be the quote-unquote horror part of this. But it sounds way more post-apocalyptic than horror.
Okay.
But Josh Simmons is classically a horror writer, so...
Wow.
So we're gonna do more horror next week. Apparently that was some of the best of the rest. And then we're gonna cheer things back up the week after that with Wovable Oaf. Which okay. I literally know nothing about that comic, but the title is so adorable I can't help myself. Anyway. Next week, Black River. That's it for this week.
Alright.
Until then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.